is help, not in the traditional way. Even if I could get in touch with my parents, it wasn't like they would welcome a girl they considered a stranger back with open arms. There was Gramps, but I had no way of knowing where she was now. After finding out what I had done, would she even want me? "Why do you even need this guy's help?" I interrupted, still feeling lightheaded. "Can't you just go home?" "Use your brain, Green," Chubb said. "We can't go home because PSFs are probably watching our parents." Liam shook his head, finally taking his sunglasses off. He looked exhausted, the skin under his eyes baggy and bruised. "You'll have to be really careful, okay? Do you even want me to drop you off at a bus station? Because we'd be happy." "No," Chubb said. "We most certainly would not. We've already wasted enough time on her, and she's the reason we have the league after us, too." A sharp pain sprouted on the left side of my chest, just above my heart. He was right, of course. The best option for everyone would be to drop me off at the nearest bus station and be done with it. But it didn't mean I didn't want to, or need to, find this slip kid as badly as they did. But I couldn't ask to stay. I couldn't impose on them any more than I already had, or risk ruining them with the invisible fingers that seemed bent on tearing apart every single connection I managed to make. If the league caught up to us and took them in, I'd never forgive myself. Never. If I was going to find the slip kid, I was going to have to do it by myself. You'd think I'd be used to the thought of taking on each day with no one beside me, that it'd be some kind of relief not to be in constant danger of sliding into someone else's head. But I didn't want to. I didn't want to step out under the gray, overcast sky alone and feel its chill work its way under my skin. "So," I said, squinting at the nearest trailer, "this isn't East River." "It might have been once," Liam said. "They could move around from time to time. I hadn't really considered it." "Or," Chubbs groused, "they could have already been taken back into PSF custody. Maybe this was East River, and now there is no more East River, and we're going to have to find a way to deliver Jack's letter and get home by ourselves. Only we won't ever because of the skip tracers, and we'll all be thrown back into camp. Only this time, though..." "Thank you, Chuckles," Liam cut in, "for that rousing burst of optimism." "I could be right," he said. "You have to acknowledge that." "But you could also be wrong," Liam said, dropping a reassuring hand on Zoo's head. "In any case, that's what we're going with now. This was just a false alarm. Let's see if we can find anything useful, then we'll hit the road." "Finally. I'm sick of wasting time on things that don't matter." Chubb shoved his hands into his trouser pockets and stalked toward me. If I hadn't jumped out of the way, his shoulder would have knocked into mine and sent me stumbling back. I turned, my eyes following his path as he kicked rubbish and rocks out of his way. Liam was suddenly standing next to me, his own arms crossed over his chest. "Don't take it personally," he said. I must have made a sound of disbelief, because he continued. "I mean, okay, the kid is basically a grumpy 70-year-old man trapped in a 17-year-old's body, but he's only being this insufferable to try to push you out." "Yeah, well," I thought, "it's working. And I know it's not an excuse, but he's as stressed and freaked out as the rest of us, and I guess what I'm trying to say is, all of this acid he's throwing your way, it's coming from a good place. If you stick it out, I swear you won't find a more loyal friend. But he's scared as hell about what'll happen, especially to Zoo, if we're caught again." I looked up at that, but Liam was already walking away toward a far row of battered trailers. For one crazy second, I thought about following him. But I'd caught Zoo out of the corner of my eye, her bright yellow gloves swinging at her sides. She jumped in and out of the trailers, stood on her toes to peer into the smashed windows of the RVs, and even, at one point, started to crawl into wreckage of an RV that looked like it had been split in half by a tornado. The metal roof, which was hanging on by what looked like two flimsy joints, was swaying and bouncing under the combined forces of rain and wind. Although she had the hood of her oversized sweatshirt pulled snug over her head, I watched as one of Zoo's gloved hands came up and brushed the side of her face, as if she was pushing a strand of hair out of her eyes. It didn't strike me as strange until she did it again, only to pale slightly as she caught herself. The conversation I had tried to have with Chubbs in the van came crashing back to me. "Hey, Zoo," I began, only to stop short. How were you supposed to ask a little kid if someone had played slice and dice with her brain without trampling over an already painful memory? The truth of it was, they only shaved kids' heads at Thurmond when they wanted to do some poking around inside of their skulls. They had all but stopped by the time I arrived, but it had taken a while for the older kids' hair to grow back out. Somewhere, in the back of my mind, I had wondered if this wasn't the case with her after all, if the reason she couldn't speak was because they had crossed a few wires they shouldn't have, or gone a step too far in the name of finding a cure. "Why did they cut your hair?" I asked finally. I knew plenty of girls that would have preferred shorter hair, myself included, but aside from an annual haircut for the girls, we didn't have much say in the matter. The way that Zoo seemed to stroke her ghost hair made me think she hadn't had much say either. If she had been upset by my question, she didn't show it. Zoo brought her hands up to her head and began to scrub at it, making a face of acute discomfort. Seeing that I wasn't getting it, she slipped one hand out of its glove and went to work scratching at her scalp. "Oh," I said. "Oh, you mean your group had lice?" She nodded. "Yikes," I said. It made sense, but it still didn't explain why she couldn't open her mouth and answer me. "I'm so sorry." Zoo lifted a shoulder in a half-hearted shrug, then turned and bounded up into the nearest RV. The door wobbled and protested as I followed her in, squealing as its hinges worked. Zoo made a face, and I made one back at her in agreement. The whole home smelled sweet, but not pleasant, almost like rotten fruit. I started in the small central living space, opening and closing the pale cabinet doors. The seat cushions were done up in an obnoxiously bright purple, but they, like the small TV hanging on the wall across from them, were coated with dust and dirt. The only thing out on the counter was a single coffee mug. The back sleeping area was equally spare, a few cushions, a lamp, and a closet with a red dress, a white button-down shirt, and a whole fleet of empty hangers. I had only just reached for the shirt when I saw it at the edge of my vision. Someone had attached it to the RV's windshield in place of a rearview mirror. It was nothing that would have seemed odd from the outside looking in, or drawn attention unless you were really, truly staring at it. But inside, standing only a few feet away from it, I was close enough to see the red light at the base of it. Close enough to see that camera inside was pointed toward everything and everyone that passed by on the road in front of it. And if I could see Betty from where I was, so could it. The camera's shape was slightly different from the ones they had at Thurmond, but close enough to make me think the same people were behind it. I looked down at Zoo, and she looked up at me. "Stay right here," I said, reaching for the coffee pot on the table. I crossed the RV in three steps, the coffee pot out in front of me like a sword. I kicked aside a few empty boxes and trash, and saw, mixed in with a litter of plastic bags, a small red glove, too small for any adult's hand. I didn't realize the pot was still in my hand until I brought it down against the device and smashed it. The cheap glass body broke off and fell to the ground, leaving me holding its handle. The black bulb stayed perched exactly where it was, only now the camera's eye rotated to face me. "It's on," I thought through the haze of panic, searching for something else to smash it with. "It's recording." I didn't remember calling for her, but Zoo appeared at my side in an instant, stuffing something under the front of her oversized sweatshirt. She must have recognized it, too, because before I could even get another word in, she was pulling off one of her yellow rubber gloves and reaching toward it. "Don't!" I'd never seen a yellow use their abilities before. I'd suffered the after effects, of course, power outages across the camp, white noise when the camp controllers thought one of them had done it on purpose. But they had been gone so long at Thurmond that I had stopped trying to imagine what it must have been like for them to speak the mysterious language of electricity. Zhu's fingers had only brushed against it, but the camera began to let out a high-pitched whine. There was a bolt of white-blue that seemed to leap from her bare finger to the camera's outer shell. That same crackling line whipped down over the plastic, causing it to smoke and warp under its heat. Without warning, all of the lights in the RV flashed on, glowing so molten hot that they shattered. The vehicle began to cough and sputter, shaking under our feet, as its engine found itself miraculously revived after a long sleep. Zhu jammed her hand back into its glove and crossed her arms over her chest. She squeezed her eyes shut, as if willing it all to stop. But we didn't have time to wait around and see if it would. I moved toward the door, grabbing the front of her sweatshirt to all but drag her out of the RV. She was still stumbling as I pulled her around to the end that faced the road and Black Betty. "Come on," I said, not letting her slow. The brightness was gone from her face, blown out like a candle. "It's okay," I lied. "We just need to get the others." There was a camera installed in the front windshield of every trailer in that front row. I spotted them one by one as we ran back toward Betty. But there was no point trying to get rid of them now. Whoever was going to see us had likely already seen us. We just had to get out of there, and fast. "They could be old," I tried telling myself, throwing Betty's door open. "They could have been installed years ago in case of robberies. Who knew where the video they recorded was being sent? Maybe nowhere at all." And at the same time, my heart was beating out a completely different track. "They're coming. They're coming. They're coming." I thought about yelling for the others, but they could have been anywhere in the park. I climbed into the van after Zhu and did the only other thing that seemed to make sense in that moment. I banged the heel of my palm against the wheel. The high whine of Betty's horn shook the sleepy landscape awake. A cluster of birds flew up from nearby trees, hitting the sky at the same moment I began beating out a faster, more insistent rhythm. Chubbs appeared first, booking it down one aisle of RVs, and Liam a second later, a few rows over. When they saw that it was still just us, they both slowed down. An annoyed look crossed Chubbs' face. I leaned out of the open driver's side window and shouted, "We have to go! Now!" Liam said something to Chubbs that I didn't hear, but they did as they were told. I stayed crouched between the two front seats as the boys jumped inside. "What?" Liam was almost out of breath. "What's wrong?" I pointed to the nearest trailer. "They have cameras installed," my voice rasped. "In every one of them." Chubbs sucked in a sharp breath. "You're sure?" Liam's voice was calm. Too calm. I could tell he was forcing it, even as his fingers fumbled to put the keys in the ignition. The van's back tires spun against the mud as he threw it into reverse. I went tumbling onto my backside with the force of his acceleration. "Oh my God," Chubbs was saying. "I can't believe it. We got Hansel and Gretel'd? Oh my God." "Do you think it was her?" "No," Liam said. "No. She's sneaky for a skip tracer, but this is something else." "They could have been there for a while," I said, just as we found the highway again. It was empty and open in front of us, a gaping mouth ready to swallow us whole. "They could have been spying on the people that lived there. Maybe that really was East River. Or it was just a trap for kids looking for the real East River." Liam propped his elbow against the door panel and his chin against his palm. When he spoke, the hundreds of snaking cracks in the windshield cut up his reflection. He pushed the minivan up into a faster speed, causing the wind to whistle through the bullet hole. "Just keep your eyes open and let me know if you see anyone or anything acting suspect." "Define suspect. The rows of shuttered houses? A shot-up minivan?" "I knew we should have waited until it was dark," Chubbs said, tapping his fingers against the passenger seat window. "I knew it. If those cameras were on, they probably got the license plate number and everything." "I'll take care of the plates," Liam promised. Chubbs' lips parted, but he said nothing, only resting his head against the window. "Should I be looking for PSFs?" I asked as we drove over another railroad track. "Worse," Chubb sighed. Skip tracers. Bounty hunters. The PSFs are stretched pretty thin by all accounts, Liam explained. Same with the National Guard and what's left of the local police. I don't know that they'd send a unit all the way out here on a tip, and unless they just so happen to have a resident bounty hunter in this neck of the woods, we're going to be fine. Those were famous last words if I had ever heard them. The reward for turning in a kid is $10,000. Chubbs twisted around to look at me. And the whole country is broke as a joke. We are not going to be fine. I heard a train in the distance, its horn so similar to the ones that had passed by Thurmond at all hours of the night. It was enough for me to dig my fingernails into the skin of my thighs and squeeze my eyes shut until the nausea passed. I didn't even realize the conversation had rolled on without me until I heard Liam ask, "You okay, Green?" I reached up and wiped my face, wondering if the wetness there was from the rain or if I'd been crying without realizing it. I didn't say anything as I crawled to the rear seat. I didn't jump into their conversation about where they would need to look next for East River, though I wanted to. There were hundreds, thousands, millions of places the slip kid could have set up camp, and I wanted to help them puzzle it out. I wanted to be part of it. But I couldn't ask, and I needed to stop lying to myself, because every second I stayed with them was another chance for them to discover that skip tracers and PSFs weren't the real monsters of the world. No. One of the real ones was sitting in their back seat. For once, the music was off. It was the silence from the speakers that unnerved me, more than the deserted roads or the empty shells of repossessed houses. Liam was a constant stream of motion, looking around the abandoned small towns we drove through, glancing at the gas level, fiddling with the turn signal, fingers dancing on the steering wheel. At one point, his eyes flashed toward mine in the rearview mirror. It was just for an instant, but I felt the small twinge in my stomach as sharply as I would have if he had taken a soft finger and run it down the length of my open palm. My face was flushed, but something inside of me had gone very cold. It had been half a second, no more, but it was plenty long enough to notice the way his eyes had darkened with something that might have been frustration. Chubbs was in the front seat, folding and unfolding something in his lap over and over again, almost like he didn't realize he was doing it. "Will you cut that out?" Liam burst out, agitated. "You'll rip it." Chubbs stopped immediately. "Can't we just try? Do we need the slip kid for this? Do you really want to risk it?" "Jack would have." "Right? But Jack?" Liam's voice trailed off. "Let's just play it safe. He'll help us when we get there." "If we get there," Chubbs huffed. "Jack?" I didn't realize I had said it aloud until Liam's eyes looked up at me in the rearview mirror. "It's none of your business," Chubbs said, and left it at that. Liam was only a little more forthcoming. "He was our friend. In our room at camp, I mean. We're just trying to get in touch with his dad. It's one of the reasons we need to hit up the slip kid." I nodded toward the sheet of paper. "But before you guys broke out, he wrote a letter?" "The three of us each did," Liam said, "in case one of us backed out at the last minute and didn't want to come or didn't make it out." "Which Jack did not." Chubb's voice could have cut steel. Behind him, house after gorgeous colonial house passed in rapid-fire succession, their colors winking at us through her window. "Anyway," Liam cleared his throat, "we're trying to put his letter in his dad's hands. We tried going to the address Jack gave us, but the house had been repossessed. He left a note saying he was going to D.C. for work, but no new address or phone number. That's why we need the slip kid's help. To find where he is now."
"You can't just mail it?"
"They started scanning mail for this exact reason about 2 years after you went to Thurmond," Liam explained. "The government reads all, speaks all, and writes all.
They've crafted a lovely little story about how we're all being saved and reprogrammed back into sweet little darlings at camp, and they don't want anyone to get wind of the truth. I honestly had no idea what to say to that.
Sorry, I mumbled. I didn't mean to give you a shakedown about it.
It's okay, Liam said after the silence had stretched to the point of breaking. It's fine.
There wasn't a way to explain how I knew. Maybe it was the way Liam's hands tightened on the steering wheel, or how he kept glancing in his side mirror throughout the conversation, long after a silver car had passed us from the other direction. It could have been the way his shoulder sagged, sloping down in a way that was so defeated. I just knew, long before I caught his worried eyes in the rearview mirror. Slowly, without disturbing Zoo and Chubbs, as they watched an endless stream of forest pass by the side windows, I crouched between the two front seats again. Liam met my gaze for a split second, nodding in the direction of his side mirror.
"See for yourself," he seemed to say.
So I did. Trailing behind us, back about 2 car lengths, was an old white pickup truck. With the rain fogging up the air between the 2 cars, I couldn't tell if there were 1 or 2 men inside. They looked like little more than 2 black ants from where I was sitting.
"Interesting," I said, keeping my voice even.
"Yep," he said, his jaw clenched. The muscles of his neck strained.
"Gotta love West Virginia. Glorious mountain state. Land o' many John Denver songs."
"Maybe," I began slowly, "you should pull over and look at a map." It was one way of feeling out the situation. Liam was about to turn onto George Washington Highway, slightly wider than the twisting road we were leaving. If the truck was following us, they wouldn't be able to stop without revealing it. In any case, whoever was driving the truck wasn't being aggressive about it. If he was a bounty hunter, as Liam apparently thought, they were probably feeling us out, too. We continued up Gorman Road, following its natural curve. Black Betty slowed in anticipation of the upcoming turn. Liam hesitated half a second before flipping his turn signal on. I looked in the mirror, my heart lifting when I saw the truck turn its other blinker on. They were turning right. We were going left. Liam blew out a long sigh, finally sitting back against his seat as the minivan reached the intersection of the highway and the road. There was another car turning off the highway, a small silver Volkswagen. Both Liam and I threw up a hand to block the intense glint of the sun against its windows.
"Okay, old man River." Liam gave the car an impatient wave. "Go ahead and turn before the next century. No, take your time. Shave. Contemplate the universe."
Leonard Skinner was blasting through the pickup truck's open windows as it pulled up alongside us, creaking and groaning in the way all old cars seem to do. Freebird, of course. It had to be Dad's favorite. 2 seconds into the damn song, and it was like I was back in the front seat of his squad car, cruising around town. That was the only time I got to listen to the good music, when it was just the 2 of us, cruising. Mom hated the stuff. A laugh bubbled up inside of me as I watched the driver bob his head in time with the music. He howled the words at the top of his lungs, exhaling each lyric with a puff of cigarette smoke. And then it was replaced by a different sound, a shriek of sorts. I looked up just in time to see the Volkswagen slam on its brakes right in front of us, jolting to a stop and sending another blinding glare of sunlight our way.
"You have got to be kidding me!"
Liam made as if to press his hand down on the horn, but not before the driver of the Volkswagen rolled down his window and pointed something black and gleaming at us.
"No."
The world went into sharp focus. Sound evaporated around me.
"No."
I reached up and slapped Black Betty's radio button on, turning it up as loud as it would go. Liam and Chubbs both started yelling, but I knocked Liam's hand away before he could switch it off. The white noise cut straight through the music from the speakers, tearing at our ears. Not as loud or as powerful as I was used to, and not even close to as bad as it had been last time, but still there, still agonizing. My radio trick couldn't drown it out, not completely. The others crumbled around me, shriveling at the first piercing shriek. Liam fell forward against the wheel, mashing his hands up against his ears. Chubbs knocked his head into the passenger seat window, as if trying to ram the noise out of his head. I felt Black Betty began to drift forward, only to jerk to a stop when Liam hit the brakes instead of the gas. The door opened beside me, and a pair of arms circled Chubbs's waist, trying to untangle him from the seatbelt. I pulled myself up off the floor and lashed a hand out, catching the man's cheek and raking my fingernails down as hard as I could. It was enough to startle the truck driver, the same one that had been nodding his head to Freebird 2 seconds before, into dropping Chubbs. He was left half-hanging in his seat, half-hanging out. The driver stumbled back against the bed of his truck, his words drowned out by the thunderstorm of noise that had settled over the three cars. It was only then that I saw the badge hanging around his neck on a silver cord, and the bright red sigh stitched there. They weren't skip tracers. Sigh. PSF. Camp. Thurmond. Capture. The man from the Volkswagen had opened the driver's side door of the van and was trying to unhook Liam's seatbelt. He wasn't large in any sense of the word. He looked like he could have been an accountant, with thick glasses and hunched shoulders from spending too many hours at a desk. But he didn't need strength, not when he was holding the black megaphone in his hands. Some of the PSFs at Thurmond carried the noise machines around with them, blasting them at small, rowdy groups, or just to see a few kids squirm. What did they care? They couldn't hear it. Every nerve in my body was singing, but I launched my elbow into the chest of the pickup truck driver. He fell back again, and I pulled the door shut and locked it. I only had a second to look back at Zoo as I dove across Liam's body fist first. I nailed Volkswagen in the glasses, knocking them off his face. Somewhere behind me, pickup truck had moved onto the sliding door, and this time he wasn't empty-handed. Zoo didn't flinch as the rifle was pointed in her face. By the way she was moaning, her eyes scrunched up and her yellow gloves curled over her ears in agony, I don't think she was seeing straight. I didn't know what to do. My hands were on Liam, trying to shake him back into consciousness. His eyes flashed open, clear and so blue, but it was only for an instant. The megaphone was suddenly 2 inches from my face, and the white noise sunk into my brain like an axe. My bones went to jelly. I didn't register the fact I had fallen over Liam until I was there. The only thing louder than the white noise, than the radio, than Chubb's screams, was the sound of Liam's heart racing. I squeezed my eyes shut again, my fingers curling into the soft leather of Liam's coat. Half of me wanted to push away, put enough distance between us that I had no chance of sliding into his mind. But the other half of me, the desperate part, was already trying to push through, to anchor myself to him and will him to move. If I could hurt someone, shouldn't that mean I could help them too? Get up, I begged. Get up! Get up! Get up! Get up! Get up! There was a high-pitched wail, a sound that couldn't have possibly come from a human. I forced my eyes open. Pickup truck had his rifle in one hand and the collar of Zoo's shirt in the other, and he was tugging both in the direction of the truck. I tried to scream for her, even as I felt Volkswagen's hands in my hair, yanking me up and out of the door. He let me hit the ground hard, the loose gravel cutting open my legs and palms. I rolled onto my side, trying to twist away from the PSF's reach. From under Betty, I saw flutters of yellow dropping to the road like two small birds, and heard a door slam. Stuart, confirm sigh number 42755 spotted. Volkswagen wrenched the driver's side door open again, pulling something bright orange from his pocket. I swiped at my eyes, trying to force the double image of him I was seeing back into one. The orange device in the PSF's free hand was no bigger than a cell phone, easy enough to maneuver in front of Liam's face from where it was pressed against the minivan's steering wheel. Taking a swipe at the PSF's ankle with my hand was pointless. He was so involved with whatever it was he was doing that he didn't so much as notice. Liam. My mouth wasn't moving. It wasn't working. Liam. The orange device flashed, and a moment later, above even the wailing of the white noise, I heard Volkswagen say, "That's a positive ID on Liam Stewart." Something hot and sharp cut through the air, billowing out under Betty like a stinging cloud of sand. I felt it rub up against my bare skin and had to turn my face away from the blinding light that came next. A flash burn that erased anything and everything that stood in its way. I heard Volkswagen cuss from above me, only to be drowned out by the sound of metal screeching against metal, glass exploding so hard, so fast, that tiny shards dropped like hail onto the ground in front of me. And then it was gone. The white noise cut out sharply as something clattered to the ground and landed a short distance away. The megaphone. I stretched my arm out, hand groping for the megaphone's handle. Volkswagen was screaming something that I couldn't hear over the ringing in my ears, and I was too focused on getting the bullhorn to actually give a damn and listen. A hand wrapped around my bare ankle and tugged me back across the ground, but not before my fingers closed around the handle. "Get up, you piece of—" There was a digital squeak, like an alarm, and the man immediately dropped my leg. "This is Larson, requesting immediate backup." I pushed myself up on my knees with a grunt, then my feet. The man had his back turned to me 1 second too long, and when he finally realized his mistake and looked over his shoulder, he was rewarded with a face full of metal as I swung the megaphone. His radio clattered to the asphalt, and I kicked it out of his reach. Both of his hands went up, trying to shield his face from another hit, but I wasn't going to go easy on him. I wasn't going to let him take me back to Thurmond. My hand closed over his exposed forearm, and I yanked it, forcing him to look down at me. I watched his pupils shrink in his hazel eyes before blowing back out to their normal size. The man had a foot of height on me, but you never would have known by the way he dropped to his knees in front of me. He hadn't even been able to catch his breath, let alone keep me from walking straight into his mind. "Leave," I tried to say. My jaw was clenched. The muscles there seized as though the white noise was still running through them like a current of pulsing electricity. "Leave." I had never done this before, and there was no way to know if it would actually work, but what did I have to lose now? His memories flooded over me, wave after wave lapping at my brain, and all I could think was, "I'm going to do this. It is going to work." Martin had said that he pushed feelings into people, but my abilities didn't work that way, and they never had. I only saw images. I could only muddle, sort, and erase images. But I'd never tried to do anything else. I had never wanted to before this moment. Because if I couldn't help these kids, if I couldn't save them, then what good was I? What point did I even have? Do it. Just do it. I imagined the man picking up his radio. Every detail, from the way he would fumble for it without his glasses, to the way his jeans would wrinkle. I imagined him canceling the request for backup. I imagined him walking down the rocky hill that kissed the edge of the road, into the wild. And when I released my fingers from his arm, one by one, that's exactly what he did. He walked away, and each step brought a new jolt of shock. I had done that. Me. I turned to where black smoke spilled out over the road, coating the hill's grass and hidden edges in a thick, ugly blanket. Then I remembered. Zoo. I could see the wreckage clearly now as I limped forward. The pickup truck, which at one point had been parked beside Betty, was now several hundred feet away, resting in the empty green field. The smaller silver Volkswagen was on its side in front of it, a heap of twisted metal that I barely recognized. It was smoking wildly, belching out thick smoke, as if it were only one small spark away from exploding. It rammed it, I realized. The truck rammed it out of the way. I followed the trail of tire marks and glass, but I only found truck driver. What was left of him. His body was tangled up in itself in the wild grass.
I couldn't tell where one limb began and the other ended. None of them seemed to be in the right place. His elbows stuck up from the ground like two broken wings. He had been rammed, too. Something cold and brittle wrapped itself around my chest, forcing me back out of the haze of smoke once I confirmed Zhu wasn't in either car. I waited until I cleared the heaviest of the smoke, before falling to my knees and throwing up what little food I had in my stomach. It was only when I looked up that I finally saw her, sitting on the road, just beside Betty, her back slumped forward, her head bowed, but alive. Alive and safe. My mind clung to those two words as I tried calling for her again. Zhu looked up, panting. As I stumbled closer, the smoke revealed her in pieces. Bloodshot eyes, a cut on her forehead, tears streaming down her dirt-stained cheeks. My head throbbed in time with my heartbeat as I knelt down in front of her, and for several agonizing seconds, it was all that I could hear.
"Oh, okay?" I asked, my mouth feeling like mush.
Her teeth chattered as she nodded.
"What happened?"
I squeezed out. Zhu curled down on herself like she was trying to vanish from my sight. Her yellow gloves were beside her on the ground, and her bare hands were still up and facing forward, as if she had only touched the truck a second before. I didn't know what to say to get her to calm down. I didn't even know how to calm myself down. This girl, this yellow, she'd destroyed two vehicles and one life in a matter of seconds. And by the looks of it, she'd done it with a single touch. But even knowing that, she was still Zhu. And those hands, they were the ones that had pulled me to safety. I lifted her back into Betty with shaking arms. Zhu was hot, well past the point of feeling feverish. Dropping her into the closest seat, I pressed my hands against her cheeks, but her eyes couldn't focus on me. I was about to roll the door shut when she grabbed my wrist and pointed toward her gloves on the ground. "Got 'em," I said. I tossed them to her, and then turned to confront a heavier load. Chubbs was still passed out in the passenger seat, his body hanging out of the open door. The truck driver hadn't been able to maneuver his long limbs farther than that, thank God. Otherwise, Chubbs probably would have been in the grass with the driver. His limp sack of bones smacked against the door as I slammed it shut behind him. I tripped over the tips of my tennis shoes as I made my way around the front of the van. With a cloud of bright spots bleaching out my sight, I pulled the driver's door open the rest of the way. Liam was also still out cold, and no amount of shaking was able to stir him up into consciousness. Zhu began to whimper, her cries muffled as she pressed her face against her knees.
"You're okay, Zhu," I said. "We're all okay. We're gonna be fine."
I untangled Liam's arms from the gray seatbelt and half-pushed, half-rolled him off the driver's seat. I wasn't strong enough to deposit him into one of the back seats, not right then. So he ended up on the floor, wedged between the two front seats. With his face turned up toward me, I could see the muscles around his mouth twitch, every so often turning the corners of his lips up in an unnatural smile. I stared at the wheel, trying to bring to mind the right steps to getting the van to work, trying to remember what Liam had done, what Kate had done, what my father used to do. 16, and I couldn't even figure out where the goddamn parking brake was, let alone if it was actually on. In the end, it didn't matter. I could drive with it on or off, apparently, and all I really needed to know was that the right pedal was go and the left was stop, and there really wasn't a whole lot more to it than that. Betty tore through the thickest heart of the smoke and chased it down the open road until we were finally free of the wreckage, and the air coming through the vents no longer carried the echo of the white noise into our heads or the smell of smoke into our lungs. 11. I got maybe 10 miles before the boys began to rouse, with Zhu still crying in the back seat and me having no idea where we had been headed in the first place. To say I was relieved was an understatement.
"Holy crap," Liam croaked.
He pressed a hand against the side of his head and startled, sitting straight up.
Holy crap!
His face had been inches away from Chubb's feet, so his hands went there first, yanking at them like he was making sure they were still attached to something. Chubb let out a low moan and said,
I think I'm going to be ill.
Zoo? Liam crawled toward her, earning another yelp out of Chubb's as he kicked his leg.
Zoo, did you?
She only cried harder, burying her face in her gloves.
Oh my God, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry, I...
Liam sounded agonized, like his guts were being torn straight out of him. I watched him press his fist against his mouth, heard him try to clear his throat, but he couldn't get another word out.
Zoo,
I said, sounding strangely calm to my own ears.
Listen to me. You saved us. We wouldn't have made it without you.
Liam's head jerked around, as if just remembering I was there. I winced, but how could I be upset that he would check on his real friends first? I felt his eyes on the back of my neck as he worked his way back up to me. When he reached the driver's seat, he collapsed into it, his face drawn and pale.
Are you all right?
He asked, his voice rough.
What happened? How did you get us out?
It was Zoo, I began, already well aware of the narrow line I'd have to walk between the truth and what I could actually tell them, both for myself and for Zoo's sake. I wasn't sure how much she actually remembered from what happened, but I wasn't about to confirm any of her fears. In the end, all I said was, she sent one car crashing into the other. It knocked one of the guys out and sent the other one running.
What was...
Chubbs was having a hard time breathing.
That horrible noise.
I stared at him, my mouth trying to push the words past my disbelief.
You've never heard that before?
The boys both shook their heads.
Jesus,
Liam said. That was like hearing a cat go through a blender while being electrocuted. You really didn't have white noise. Calm control? I demanded, surprised by the anger licking at my heart. What camp had these kids been in? Candyland?
And you did?
Liam shook his head, probably trying to clear the ringing. They used it at Thurmond to disable us, I explained, when there were outbursts or problems. Keeps you from being able to think long enough to use your abilities.
Why are you all right?
Chubbs wheezed, half suspicious, half jealous. That was the question of the day, wasn't it? My long, sordid history with the white noise included several episodes of fainting, vomiting, and memory loss, not to mention my most recent experience with bleeding profusely out of my eyes and nose. I guess once you'd had a taste of the worst, pretty bad isn't all that terrible. If it was their first time dealing with it, that would at least explain why they wilted like dead grass after only a few seconds. Liam was searching my face, and I wondered what he was seeing. All of it? I thought of how his jacket had felt against my cheek, the curve of his spine, and something calm and warm settled in my chest.
I'm used to it, I guess, I said, and greens aren't as affected as blues and the others.
I remembered to add this, a truth and a lie. Liam offered to trade seats as soon as his face lost that familiar pinched look, and a healthy color began to return to his cheeks. The kid deserved a round of applause for how well he was hiding the tremors in his hands and legs from the others, but I had a trained eye. I recognized the nasty afterbites of the white noise as the old friends they were. He needed a few more minutes.
Come on,
he said as the dashboard clock clicked off another minute.
You've done...
His voice trailed off. I looked down at him only to realize he was looking at me, or, more accurately, my bony, busted knees. A moment later, after I returned my gaze to the road, I felt something warm hovering just above my leg and jerked away.
Ah, sorry?
Liam whispered, pulling his hand back. I watched the tips of his ears go a bright cherry red.
It's just, you're all cut up.
Please, can we stop for a second? We should regroup, figure out where we are.
But I didn't want to just pull over alongside some random stretch of fence and pasture. I waited until we had found an old rest stop, complete with its brick-red colonial-style finish, and turned the van off the road and into the deserted parking lot. Chubbs took the opportunity to try to empty the contents of his stomach onto the ground, but accomplished little more than some enthusiastic dry heaving. Liam stood and patted his back. "Will you help Ruby when you're done?" Chubbs might have hated me, or wanted to scare me off, but he at least recognized I had played some small part in saving his skin. He didn't say yes, though, only crossed his arms over his chest and blew out a long, martyred sigh. "Thanks," Liam said. "You're the best, Mother Teresa." He went out the sliding door behind my seat and made a beeline for the small cluster of silver water fountains that stood between him and the restroom entrances. Zoo followed him out, bounding across the distance with a pink duffel bag in hand. By the time I turned my attention back to him, Chubbs had collected himself enough to start poking and prodding me.
"Easy,"
I gasped when his finger brushed my elbow. He jabbed a finger against one of the overhead lights, and it snapped on at his command. I finally saw that the skin from my elbow down to my wrist had been rubbed raw by the road.
"Turn toward me."
Chubbs looked like he was fighting with all the strength he had left in him not to roll his eyes at me.
"Now, Green, before I grow a beard."
I twisted myself around so my legs were facing toward him in the passenger seat. Unsurprisingly, they looked just about as pretty as my arm did. Both knees were skinned and already scabbing over in places, but aside from a few stray scratches and bruises that had nothing to do with the attack, they were in much better shape than my hands. Chubbs pulled what looked like a briefcase out from under his seat and popped the clasps on it open. I was only able to sneak a quick glance inside before he pulled out four white square packets and shut it again.
"God, how did you even manage to do this?"
he muttered as he ripped the first one open. I smelled the antiseptic and tried to squirm away. Chubbs glowered at me from over the rims of his glasses.
"If you're going to make yourself at home, could you at least try to take better care of yourself? It's hard enough as it is to keep the other two in one piece without you flinging yourself at danger, too."
"I didn't fling," I began, then thought better of it. "Sorry?"
"Yeah. Well," he huffed, "not as sorry as you'll be if any of these cuts get infected."
He brought my right hand up close to his face in order to get a better look, and I tried not to wince as he began to swipe at it with one of the disinfecting wipes, about as tenderly as a wolf shredding apart its dinner. The sting that followed snapped me out of the hazy, numb stupor I was falling into. Suddenly aware of his touch, I wrenched my hand away from his and took the cold, wet cloth from his hand. It didn't hurt any less when I cleaned the small bits of asphalt out myself.
"You should go check on Lee and Zoo," I said.
"No, because then they'll be all pissed off I'm not taking care of you."
After a moment, he admitted, somewhat reluctantly,
"Besides, you did seem to... Well, you're worse off than the rest of us, at least. They can wait."
He must have seen the corner of my mouth twitch because he added,
"But don't think you're going to get all the bandages. These are superficial wounds at best."
"Yes, sir," I said, tossing the disinfectant wipe out of the window. He handed me a new one for my other palm, eyes still narrowed, but maybe, just maybe, softening at the edges. I felt myself relax a bit, but I wasn't suffering under any delusion that we were about to start braiding friendship bracelets for each other.
"Why did you lie?"
My head shot up at his question, suddenly feeling very light. "I didn't... What are you... I'm not..."
"About Zoo?"
He glanced back over his shoulder. His voice was quiet when he continued.
"You said she only knocked that guy out. But that wasn't the case, was it? He was killed."
I nodded. "She didn't mean to."
"Obviously not," he said sharply. "I was wondering why no one was coming after us, and I got worried, knowing what it would do to her. And, well, I guess you have some common sense after all."
It came to me then as I looked at him, one of those rare, perfect crystallizations of understanding. He wanted me out because he saw me as a threat to them. He wouldn't ever trust me until I proved myself otherwise, and after my slip in messing up the color of the SUV, that was likely to be half past never. What's the world with one less skip tracer anyway? He bent down to retrieve his briefcase again, replacing the unused supplies in it. That's right, I thought, sitting up straighter. I didn't tell them. They weren't skip tracers. They were PSFs. At that, Chubbs actually barked out a laugh. And I'm guessing their uniforms were stuffed under their plaid shirts and jeans. One of them was wearing a badge, I said, and the orange device they were using, I saw one at Thurmond once. Chubbs didn't look convinced, but we didn't have the time, and I certainly did not have the energy, to be running circles around the truth for the next hour. Look, I continued, you don't have to believe me, but you should know that one of them radioed in a PSI number, 42755. That's Liam, right? I gave the story from my end and left the rest for him to fill in from his side. By the time I got to a description of the orange device, he had heard quite enough. He sucked in a deep breath, his lips drawing together to a point until he looked more ferret than human. I held my own breath as he rolled down his window and proceeded to relate, down to the exact words, what I had just finished telling him, like he didn't trust me to do it myself. I told you the PSFs would catch up to us, he kept repeating, like we hadn't heard him shout it the first 10 times. We're just lucky it wasn't her. I wondered who he meant, but knew better than to ask. Liam ignored him and kept his back to us, still bent over the silver drinking fountain. Zoo stood next to him, dutifully holding the button down so he could use both hands to scrub his face in the stream of water shooting out of it. I used the last of the wipes to clean the dirt off my own face. I just want to know how that PSF recognized him, even before he used his orange thing. It flashed, but he knew the number off the top of his head. He didn't need to wait for it to tell him that. Chubb stared at me a moment, then brought a hand up to pinch the bridge of his nose. Everyone had their photo taken when they were processed, didn't you? I nodded. So they put together a network for searching the photos? I asked. Green, how the hell am I supposed to know that? He said. Describe it to me again. The orange gadget must have been some sort of a camera or scanner. That was the only explanation I could drum up that Chubbs didn't shoot down as being moronic. I pressed my hands against my eyes, trying to fight back the urge to vomit. It's bad news if that's all it takes for them to ID us, Chubbs said, rubbing a hand over his forehead and smoothing out the wrinkles there. If we weren't already screwed, they probably know we're looking for East River now, which means they're going to have more patrols out, which means they're going to be watching our families even closer, which means it'll be even harder for the slip kid. He never finished his train of thought. He didn't have to. I let out a humorless laugh. Come on, they're going to send out a whole armada for a few freaks? First of all, armadas are comprised of ships, Chubb said. And second, no, they wouldn't send one out for a few freaks. Then what's the... But they would send one out to get Lee. He didn't wait for me to piece it together. Green, who do you think was the mastermind behind our camp's breakout? When the others were ready to return to the minivan, we played a silent game of musical chairs. Chubbs took the middle seat on the passenger side, and Zoo her usual perch behind the driver's seat. I had two options at that point. Crawl into the rear seat or tough it out in the front seat while trying to act like everything was all hunky-dory and pretending that Chubbs hadn't just told me Liam was responsible for what might have been the only successful camp breakout ever. In the end, exhaustion won out. I managed to collapse into the passenger seat, feeling about as lovely as a wilted head of lettuce, just as Liam climbed into the driver's seat. He grinned. Must be tiring being the big hero. I waved him off, trying to quiet the small, ridiculous buzz of happiness in my chest that came with his words. He was just trying to be nice.
Good thing we had the ladies there to take care of business, he continued, turning to Chubbs. Otherwise, you and I would be rolling around in the bed of a truck halfway back to Ohio.
Chubbs only grunted, his coloring still faintly gray. Liam looked a little better, at least. His face was tinged pink from the shock of cold fountain water, and his fingers still seemed to be twitching every so often. But his eyes had lost that cloudy, unfocused look, considering it was his first time being ear-tased by the white noise. Liam had recovered fast.
All right, team, he said slowly. Time for a Betty vote.
No, Chubb startled back to life. I know exactly where you're going with this, and I know I'm going to be overruled, and I...
All those in favor of letting our girl Wonder stay with us for the time being, raise your hand.
Both Liam and Zoo raised their hands immediately. Zoo looked at me with a smile that seemed particularly bright next to Chubb's glowering face.
We don't know anything about her.
Hell, we don't know that what she has told us is even true, he objected.
She could be a psychopath who kills us in our sleep,
or calls her league buddies in just when we let our guard down.
Gee, thanks, I said dryly, half flattered he thought I was capable of that level of scheming.
The longer she stays with us, he added, the more likely it is the league will catch up to us, and you know what they do to their kids.
They won't catch up with us, Liam said. We took care of that already. If we stay together, we'll be fine.
No. No, 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 Chubb said. I want to register my nay vote, even though the two of you always win.
Well, don't be a bad sport about it, Liam said. This is democracy in action.
Are you sure? I asked.
Of course I am, Liam said. What I wasn't okay with was the thought of dropping you off at some back-of-beyond Greyhound station with no money, no papers, and no way of knowing for sure you got where you're going safe and sound.
There it was again, that smile. I pressed my hand against my chest, trying to keep things at bay, locked inside, to keep my hand from reaching out to brush the one he had put on the armrest of my seat. It seemed so sick, so wrong, but all I wanted to do was slip inside his mind and see what he was thinking, why he was looking at me like that. You really are a monster, I thought, pressing a fist tight against my stomach. I wanted to protect him. At that moment, it was suddenly clear to me exactly what I wanted. To protect them, all of them. They had saved me. They had saved my life and hadn't expected a single thing in return. If the showdown with the undercover PSFs had shown me anything, it was that they needed someone like me. I could help them, protect them. I didn't think I could ever begin to repay them for taking me in and letting me stay as long as I had. But if I could control myself long enough, it would be a start. It was the best I could do with what I had.
Where are you trying to go anyway?
Liam tried to keep his voice casual, but his eyes had darkened, obviously troubled.
Could you even get there on a bus if you tried?
I told them the feeble plan I'd half-baked inside of the gas station. I fingered the ends of my long, tangled hair and was surprised to feel some of the tightness in my chest ease up long enough for me to take a deep breath.
What's in Virginia Beach?
My grandmother, I think, I said. I hope. Yes, Grams, I reminded myself. Grams was still an option. She remembered me, didn't she? If I could help them find the slip kid, and if he could help me, then wasn't there a real chance I could see her again, live with her?
It was a lot of ifs. If we found the slip kid, if he was an orange, if he could help me figure out how to control my abilities, if he could help us contact our families. Once I had tapped into the vein of doubts, the rest came flooding in.
What if Grams, the thought was crushing, had passed away? She was 70 when I was taken, which meant she'd be inching closer to 80. I had never even considered it a possibility because I couldn't remember a time that she didn't look glowing and ready to take on the world, with little more than her silver hair, a neon fanny pack, and matching visor. But if I wasn't the same person I had been 6 years ago, how could I expect her to be? If she was alive, how could I ask her to take care of her freak granddaughter?